There was a paper put out by Tony Zambodi and Graham McQueen where they actually analyzed one of the towers, the top blocks, and they measured the acceleration of the top block, and they found there was no deceleration.
Right.
Meaning that it didn't stop as it hit the lower portion. Now, think about hitting a nail with a hammer. You know, you might be able to drive the nail through the board that you're hammering, but what's going to happen to the hammer? It's going to slow down as it hits the nail.
Right.
This is all common sense stuff, and yet they ignore it. On top of that, we have evidence of explosions going off far below the collapse line.
Well, keep that in mind, sir, because we're about to go to break, and that's my next question. We know the official story makes no sense on the face of it, and the more you look into it, the less sense it makes. So the question is, what really happened? What alternative hypothesis does architects and engineers put forward? And we'll ask that on the other side.
Just a week.
You need to defend your civilization against the onslaught of this cancer of progressivism, liberalism, and globalist brainwashing. This is a life or death situation. No messing around. The prescription is two doses of InfoWars taken daily.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch live right now at band.video.
Evil, so awful and almost unimaginable that it defied the ability of words to capture it. It's a void that exists even before uttering the unspeakable.
This was his fiancée, Jen. Might have been the last weekend we saw Bobby. This is the world that they fit and they had.
Nothing was ever found of my mother, so nothing to go on as far as physical evidence for her personally.
And Drew is a man on a mission.
This is what I do for Frank. And Frank is gone and nothing's going to bring him back. He's history.
I mean, we're talking, you know, people being pulverized into dust. We know that 40%, it's 1,100 and something people have not been identified.
The Unspeakable, that is the upcoming film from architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. And my guest for the next hour is Andrew Steele. He's the public relations manager and operations coordinator for architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, as well as being the host of the 9/11 Free Fall podcast. Andrew has spent the last 16 years educating the public on the anomalies that are incongruent with the official narrative of 9/11 through news aggregation, writing articles, producing videos, and spearheading the volunteer efforts at Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. His website is ae911truth.org or 911freefall.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Steele.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, and it's a very powerful video, and obviously, tomorrow, 9/11, will be 20 years to the day since the attacks. And it seems like in those 20 years, I don't know if things have gotten clearer or if they've gotten just more confusing. But one thing that we know about 9/11, like we almost know nothing for certain. Nothing's official. Nothing's confirmed in many different ways. But one thing we know, that people died, that those attacks happened. The towers came down and people died. And at the end of the day, we want to respect those people, and it's really about finding justice for those people that were victims to this horrific attack that's inspired all of the questions about this. Because after all, you can't just let a murderer go free by telling you, you know, you're not allowed to ask questions about who perpetrated the crime. So just tell us about, you know, what inspired you to get started in this and what the last 20 years has held for architects and engineers of 9/11 Truth.
Certainly. And I'd just like to just emphasize that point you just made. It is a murder investigation. People died that day, and that is first and foremost and why we seek justice. And that movie, The Unspeakable, it's going to be a breathtaking film. I think it's one of the best ones that we've ever made so far, and it really brings home why we do what we do here in the 9/11 Truth Movement. As far as me, I happened upon information about World Trade Center 7. For people who follow this program and who follow us at ae911truth.org, you, of course, know what that is. 47-story steel frame high-rise falls straight down symmetrical at 5:20 in the afternoon on September 11th. I actually saw this building fall on the day of 9/11, and I told my friend, I think they just brought down the building to control the fires or something. Wasn't using any critical thinking, common sense, no scientific method that day, because you can't just rig a building to come down that way in a single mourning. It takes at least months of planning. Right. So right there, we have a problem with the official story. So I came across this information purely by accident. Wasn't looking for it, just had it displayed in front of me. Somebody snuck it into a website that was sort of like YouTube at the time. And I was just blown away. Didn't want to believe it. Tried to debunk it. Couldn't. And that sort of just began my journey here. And I would say over 10 years now, I've been active in trying to get a new investigation and working as part of AE since 2015.
And Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth has been really on the forefront of questioning a lot of the official narrative from that day. And there's multiple ways to sort of come at 9/11. You know, you've got the political machinations with the military, very strange drills that were being held and all that sort of stuff. You've got the geopolitical machinations of what was justified by 9/11, the wars and so on. But what you guys focus on is just the physical reality of the buildings themselves, the planes themselves, how it came down. And of course, when you talk about Tower 7, you can go down a rabbit hole for heck, you could have spent the last 20 years trying to figure out what was going on. When you start seeing that the BBC was announcing it had fallen while it's still in the background of their shot, CNN, I believe, and ABC also had reports before it had come down. They'd reported that it had come down. So there was some sort of foreknowledge there as well. I mean, 20 years, two decades on this. How has Architects and Engineers tackled this? And just what has the last 20 years for that organization been like and been about?
Yeah, I mean, 9/11 is an event that has had such an impact on this world and on this country. There's so many different angles to go about it. Of course, we only focus on the science, not the who did it, not the why it was done, but the what and the how. And we focus just on the demolitions that took place in New York that day, because we represent architects and engineers. That is our area of expertise. And right now we have over 3,500 architects and engineers. So we look at the science, we look at the physics, we look at Building 7, straight down, free fall acceleration for 6.5 seconds as it comes down for eight stories. And now this is not just AE 9/11 Truth saying this at this point. There was a study out of the University of Alaska Fairbanks led up by Dr. Leroy Halsey, where they concluded that NIST's explanation for why these towers or for why Building 7, rather, came down that day is just not possible. So there's more than enough justification. And I know there's people out there who say you have to be an engineer, you have to be some kind of physicist or scientist in order to have an opinion on World Trade Center 7. No, all you have to have is two eyes and common sense. Watch this building come down. Again, straight down, symmetrical, falling as one unit. And you know that fire could not have done that to that building. And then when you explore it much deeper, you know, the National Institute of Standards and Technology issued reports on all three building collapses. And when people look at them, there's a lot of stuff that sounds good if you don't dive into the details, you know, a lot of jargon and technical talk. When you actually look at what they're saying, though, their whole story falls apart just from their own words when you apply some common sense. The problem is the general public gets intimidated by the science sometimes. And as we all know, television, mainstream media will put people up there in suits to give you an explanation, throw out all this jargon at you. And people, because they automatically don't want to believe something like this could be true, that pre-planted explosives brought the towers down, their mind defers to saying, well, they must be right. They debunked all that. But no, they didn't. And I'd be happy to get into some of the points that NIST gets wrong in their analysis.
Yes, I would like to do that. We're coming up on a break shortly here. So I want to ask, because it seems like with 9/11, just in my own personal observation, a lot of people I've talked to, and of course, 20 years, so maybe 15 years ago, I talked to them about this, and they just outright rejected any idea of, you know, truth, this idea of trutherism. Like, they were full on, the official story is the real thing, and that's that. It seems like over the last 20 years, that position has softened. And while most of the time, historically, if you have a historic lie, it gets hardened. And, you know, as you move on the decades, the more and more people just adhere to the main story. With 9/11, it's sort of been the opposite for me, where I think now you have a greater population than ever. If you ask, was 9/11, you know, do we know the real story? I think more people than ever would say no. Have you found that in your own line of work?
Yeah, absolutely. When I would first hear people talk about the fact that there were bombs in the towers, I would dismiss it. Right. I didn't look into it. I just figured, okay, there would be some conspiracy shows and that they might be fetching tonight. I actually had a friend from another country who had forwarded an email within days of September 11th saying that there had to be bombs in the towers. It was some military guy. And unfortunately, because I didn't take much of an interest at that time, I can't give you any more details than that. Mm. And people's default reaction was either to dismiss it or get outright hostile.
Right.
As we know that this was, you know, the propaganda machine went into full effect right on the day of September 11th, giving us an official story, giving us an explanation for why these towers came down. So that is what I experienced. Now, what was miraculous, though, just from my own, you know, journey with this, is a lot of people all across the country and all around the world had the exact same ideas to start speaking out on the internet, not even knowing that they were going to find other people. I started off just talking on MySpace. I mean, a simple MySpace page. Right. Led to a lot of things here and working with AE 911 Truth. But so many people had the same idea. And I think what helps us with 9/11 that we haven't had in the past, of course, is the increasing growth of the internet and sites like YouTube. We used to have Google Video, and a lot of stuff was shared. And I think that whoever was orchestrating this had, didn't count on that and the spirit and will of people.
People being able to speak their minds are very inconvenient for the tyrants. More on the other side. Stay with us, folks. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to American Journal. I'm Harrison Smith. My guest is Andrew Steele, the public relations manager and operations coordinator for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. You can find their website at ae911truth.org. That's ae911truth.org or 911freefall.com. Of course, freefall referring to the speed at which WTC-7 as well as the two Twin Towers collapsed. In complete violation of the laws of physics as we know them, or as they've been observed in the universe for the last 2,000 years, and the questions that remain from that. Now, there's so much to talk about, the tyranny, the overreach, the governmental destruction. So much of it goes back either directly to 9/11 and the Patriot Act and some of the things that were implemented there, or at least in a sort of spiritual sense, it's all following the exact same playbook. And so often the lies that were presented in the mainstream media are then confirmed by government agencies that are working with material that they can't tell you about. And this was definitely the case with the NIST as they scrambled to try to explain what most people saw and made them scratch their heads. So, Mr. Steele, can you tell us about NIST and their role in 9/11?
Sure. They scrambled. It took them a long time to try to get some kind of report out on World Trade Center 7. And then even when they published their initial report, they had to correct it because they were called out for not acknowledging the free fall in the report, the free fall of this building for 8 stories. So they did hit a revised report, and yet they still fail to acknowledge its significance. For free fall to happen, it has to be meeting no resistance on the way down for at least 8 stories again. This is impossible. Now, again, NIST put out this report. And they've even published FAQs trying to address some of the questions proposed by the 9/11 Truth community. And while you should look dive into the reports if you have the time and interest, the FAQs are very good for finding out essentially what their main answers are to the truth movement. One of them, trying to explain why this building seems to fall as one unit, is that their explanation, and let me back up even more, because people say, well, there was buildings next door that were hit by airplanes. Building 7, of course, as we should know, was not hit by an airplane.
Right.
And it did sustain some damage from the fall of the North Tower that was down in the southwest corner. However, NIST says that that did not play any significant role in initiating Building 7's collapse, where they say the damage, or rather where the collapse initiated, was in the northeast corner. And their explanation boils down to this. We'll take some of the jargon out of it, but that you had some beams framing into a particular girder, and the fires got so hot under these beams that the beams thermally expanded and pushed the girder off of its seat. And then this caused an entire chain reaction within the building, floors falling on top of each other, and that the inside fell first, and then the outside followed. So that's how they explain why this building fell or appeared to fall as one unit. But we got a problem with this. Well, first of all, as far as raging fires, we got photos from at least an hour before showing that these fires were out in the area where the collapse initiated. Mm. Again, an hour before. So if you don't have raging fires, you don't have thermally expanding beams. Also, just think about that explanation. The inside of the building fell first and the outside is still standing there, and yet you see no visible signs of this on the outside. You don't have significant window breakage. You don't have warping. It doesn't make any sense. It's not possible. The inside is attached to the outside, if you want to boil it down into the simplest terms. You would be seeing this damage on the outside, but you don't. So that explanation right there doesn't make sense on its face. When you actually dive into their reports, and we've had engineers do this, NIST got things wrong when it comes to Building 7. I mean, they had incorrect measurements. They left out important structural features in this building that would have prevented their thermal expansion hypothesis from happening. When you try to correct them or ask them to correct it, of course, they refuse to. They just say they stand by their report, typical cover-up. This is one of the reasons that we're suing them right now, or we're going to be, I believe, in a week, because we filed a request for correction. Mm. And they stood by the report. They didn't address the substance of our arguments. We filed an appeal. Again, they don't address the substance of our arguments. And so now we are going to be taking them to court. You can learn more about that at our website, ae911truth.org. But most times when a building falls, a steel frame high rise, well, they don't fall. When they burn, they light up like a torch in the night. There may be pieces that fall away here and there, but it still leaves a steel skeleton standing.
Right.
And that is not the case, of course, with World Trade Center 7. Again, the fires were not bad enough to bring this building down. And their whole explanation was a first-time-ever event. And you mentioned the BBC reporting that the building had already come down with the building still standing behind them. You know, when NIST did the initial – and I'm sorry, when FEMA did the initial report back in 2002 – trying to figure out why this building just suddenly fell straight down into its own footprint. They said that their best hypothesis had a low probability of occurrence. So how can all the news reports that day be predicting an event that had a low probability of occurrence, an event that had never happened before? Right. But then it happens three times in one day. So, you know, we look at Building 7. Some people say that's a little strange. You know, but they don't want to look at the wider event. They don't want to step back and also look at the Twin Towers, because a lot of people think they know what happened to the Twin Towers. You know, we watched the airplanes crash into the buildings. We were handed an explanation that day. Most people nodded their heads and said, OK, well, I guess that sounds good. But again, once you dive deeper into it and apply some common sense, it just doesn't make any sense. All right. So with the Twin Towers, the explanation that we're given is that when the airplanes hit, all right, it creates a section, the hole in the building. So think of this in three parts. You have a top block, you have the area where the airplane hit, and then you got the much larger lower section where nothing is going on.
Right.
And they claim that when the top blocks went, it crushed the building all the way to the ground while also destroying itself as it goes down, because we never see a top block sitting on the pile at ground zero. Now, there were earlier explanations being floated out there that the floor is pancaked. And even Nova, I believe it was on PBS, had put out a documentary claiming this. And they had a graphic where the floors are hitting each other like records on a spindle, still leaving the core column standing. But we all know that's not what happened in real life.
Right.
Again, you got to look at what happened in real life, not just some video game that the government gave you.
Right.
So they had to abandon that because there's no pancakes. There's no stacked floors at ground zero. So they went with this pile driver theory. But, you know, think about what you saw. With all of that concrete pulverizing, all those steel members ejecting in all directions, rapid speeds. I mean, think about the energy that it takes to make that concrete pulverize. All right. Now, NIST admitted that the Twin Towers fell essentially at free fall. Well, you need a hard collision of building materials to happen to make that pulverization happen and all those steel members, shoot out from in all directions. So how can you have that kind of hard collision going on when the buildings are falling essentially at free fall? It means meeting no resistance. Mm. There was a paper put out by Tony Zambodi and Graham McQueen where they actually analyzed one of the towers, the top blocks, and they measured the acceleration of the top block, and they found there was no deceleration,
right?
Meaning that it didn't stop as it hit the lower portion. Now think about hitting a nail with a hammer. You know, you might be able to drive the nail through the board that you're hammering, but what's going to happen to the hammer? It's going to slow down as it hits the nail.
Right.
This is all common sense stuff, and yet they ignore it. On right. top of that, we have evidence of explosions going off far below the collapse line.
Well, keep that in mind, sir, because we're about to go to break, and that's my next question. We know the official story makes no sense on the face of it, and the more you look into it, the less sense it makes. So the question is, what really happened? What alternative hypothesis does architects and engineers put forward? And we'll ask that on the other side.
Just a week.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch live right now at band.video.
20 years, ladies and gentlemen, 20 long years since September 11th, 2001. 20 years of war, 20 years of chaos, 20 years of division and tyranny, all justified by something that we've never really gotten good answers on. Frustratingly enough, well, one group who has stalwartly for the past two decades thrown roadblock after roadblock in the way of these tyrants attempting to simply brush over history. Oh, we know what happened. No need to question it now. Well, that organization questioning things they're not supposed to is the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. You can find their website, ae911truth.org, 911freefall.com is also where you can go to find my guest, Andrew Steele, who is, of course, the public relations manager and operations coordinator for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Now, I think the official story has been thoroughly debunked at this point, that it all just happened by accident. So what's the is there an alternative hypothesis that Architects and Engineers has sort of landed on at this point, or is it still just about pointing out the fallacies and the lacking of information in the official story, Andrew?
Well, once you peel away NIST's story, the government story, the only conclusion that you can come to is that pre-placed explosives brought these buildings down.
Right.
We were talking before the break about the squibs that you can actually see. These are mistimed explosives going off far below the collapse line. The collapse is happening up here allegedly, but you see explosions going off down here. And of course, when NIST puts out its explanations, its models, in the case of World Trade Center, Twin Towers, and Building 7, we'll just focus on Building 7 for a moment. I mean, it doesn't look anything like what happened in real life.
Mm.
You know, when you do a side-by-side comparison of the real-life video compared to what NIST put out, NIST models, they begin to twist around on themselves like a soda can. And, of course, they only go up to collapse initiation. You know, we don't get to the important stuff in that. So at the very least, this justifies a new investigation. And I've even gotten people who rabidly disagree with me to agree with me on that point, that there is no harm in having a new investigation. Right. At the very least, we get a better understanding of one of the most important events in American history, September 11th, an event that still affects us to this day. And at the very most, we unravel something that for us here at 1811 Truth, we already know, again, that pre-placed explosives brought these buildings down. Now, just talking about the physics of these buildings and the impossibility of the government's explanation doesn't even touch what is in the dust. Now, there was a study that was done by an international team of scientists led by Niels Harrit over in Denmark, where they analyzed the World Trade Center dust, and what they found was these little iron microspheres in it. And these iron microspheres were so prevalent that other studies, more official studies, used these microspheres to separate World Trade Center dust from what they call background dust, which is dust that would have nothing to do with the World Trade Center disaster. And these iron microspheres are the product of a thermite reaction. So imagine you have structural steel cutter charges going off, liquefying the steel. The steel forms droplets because of surface tension. So it's like rain falling from the sky. And what you also find is these red gray chips that, when ignited, have a thermitic reaction. Now, the other side will say, oh, that's just primer paint that was, you know, that was present there. But no, because there's been side by side comparisons of this. Primer paint will turn black and welt when ignited. And these chips that we're talking about will form these iron microspheres and actually ignite. They shouldn't be there, but they are.
Right.
So what we're looking at is a very concentrated form of thermite. We call it nanothermite. This has been documented. Now, the simple question would be, well, what did NIST do? You know, how did they find – what was their determination when they looked at the dust for themselves? Well, they didn't conduct any tests for explosives or incendiaries in the World Trade Center dust. When you ask them why, they say, well, because we don't expect to find it.
Right.
So think about that kind of circular logic. We're not going to conduct the tests because we don't expect to find anything. That doesn't make any sense, and that's not scientific. What harm can it be for them to do the exact same test? But they will dodge this question because they don't want to do it, because they don't want to come up with the same conclusions that we have. They had a presupposed conclusion to their analysis. They had to fit it into a box. I always use the analogy, let's say you're on vacation, you buy your girlfriend one of those big teddy bears while you're away at the fair, but you can't get it into your suitcase, so you start cutting arms and legs off of it. You cut the ears off. By the end, it doesn't look like what it's supposed to be.
Right.
Because you're trying to fit it into this little box here to get it home. That's exactly what NIST did. They started off with the determination that there could be nothing else that could have caused this except what we were told, the fires in the buildings.
Right.
But again, when you peel away their analysis, it shows the opposite. And again, the new investigation is the most reasonable thing that anyone can ask for. And I think everyone should get behind it, even people who don't like what we're saying.
Absolutely. Again, you know, if you look at this like one massive murder case, because indeed thousands of people died that day, brutal, completely innocent people, brutally murdered by somebody. I mean, somebody carried this out. And of course, you want to find out who this was and how it was carried out. And for people to suggest, like, how dare you want to investigate this murder, it boggles the mind. But, you know, that's how they've convinced people, which is why it's so important to revisit this topic, because it really was in so many ways the blueprint of what we're seeing in many other, you know, forms of tyranny encroachments on our individual freedoms. And that's also why I really like Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, because this is one of those topics where there is a whole warren of rabbit holes to go down. I mean, my goodness, you can get distracted or taken off on a side road so easily here. And yet you guys are like hyper-focused, laser-focused. You have a coalition of professionals with degrees. And, you know, it's not just a bunch of random people. Like, the way you guys have done it over the last 20 years is so professional and so sort of just putting your head down and driving towards a singular goal. I think it's been a blueprint for a very effective way to question some of the government's lies. And so I just think that's great. And maybe you can talk about, you know, sort of why you guys have chosen, you know, World Trade Center 7 and just the physical reality as sort of the most important thing to focus on in this 9/11 investigation that continues to this day.
Sure. I mean, once you dive into the scientific evidence proving that these buildings, the World Trade Center buildings, were brought down in controlled demolitions, it becomes the easiest thing to do to upend any argument, even for other things. Because again, if they're lying about this, you wonder what else they're lying about. Also, too, when you wake people up to this issue, even though it was 20 years ago, it's still important. But when you wake them up to this and they get an understanding of what really happened in the towers, it puts that seed in their mind for other things that may come up. You know, right. Imagine that you're talking to a staffer at a congressman's office. Now, that staffer may not have much power right now. But you put this in their mind, they quietly research it, maybe they become the next congressman.
Right.
Maybe something else comes up during their time, and maybe they will question it more. Maybe they won't pass some kind of legislation that wouldn't be in our best interest because you woke them up to 9/11. So there's a three-dimensional aspect to our activism, but also, too, to get to the bottom of this entire puzzle here with September 11th, you do have to take that kind of dispassionate look at it. Put aside any kind of political biases. I mean, we're a nonpartisan nonprofit. We will work with anybody on the right or the left. We put all of that aside. I have people on my show with the political issues one week who, you know, is completely to the right and then somebody completely to the left. Yet we all work together on this common goal because you can't argue with science. Science is a great uniter. So that's the approach that we take. And you mentioned about people saying, oh, how dare you bring this up? How dare you raise these questions? Well, first of all, if you watch our movie, which we're doing a screening of tonight at our website, by the way, ae911truth.org, we're going to be screening the film and then have a Q&A session with family members that appear in the film afterwards.
Oh, excellent.
But we have family members that are right behind us championing a new investigation, work with us. We have legislation called the Bobby McElvain Act. This is draft legislation that we're just waiting for one member of Congress, courageous member of Congress, to step forward and introduce, it would do exactly what we've been asking Congress to do for years, reinvestigate the destruction of these towers, create the select committee, and it's written in such a way that they can't just drag out NIST officials to put up the same talking points. They actually have to look into this evidence.
Very exciting stuff. We'll talk about what's ahead for architects and engineers on the other side. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment of American Journal for today. My guest is Andrew Steele. He's a public relations manager and operations coordinator for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, which has just stalwartly over the last 20 years done everything they can to try to find the truth about what happened on that day, focusing primarily or almost exclusively, I should say, on the scientific reality of what was on the ground. And you continue to make major moves. The Unspeakable is a new film that will be premiering, I guess, tonight at your website, ae911truth.org. That's ae911truth.org. You're going to be airing this video and then having a Q&A with some of the people featured in it. Can you tell me what else is ahead for architects and engineers in the near future?
Sure. I mean, we've got, like I said, we have the lawsuit against NIST. We've also got action going on in the UK. Matt Campbell, his brother Jeff, died at the World Trade Center on that day. He's seeking a new inquest into his brother's death. And they just have to prove that the new information being presented, which is going to be our information, of course, could lead to a different verdict. So what they're looking to do is to show that Jeff's death was as a result of explosive demolition as opposed to the buildings just quote unquote collapsing on that day. We've got a great barrister out there who has taken up the case, and we're going to keep on following that, but we're very actively involved, and we're going to be using our own experts that we feature at our site as the expert witnesses in this case. And I, you know, it's in the UK, and of course 9/11 happened in the United States, but it's a worldwide event. So many people were affected by it. And if we can get an acknowledgement of what really happened there, then who knows, the dominoes could start falling. So it's very important to keep track of that. And certainly if this goes our way, we're going to be publicizing it as much as we can here.
Well, it is very exciting. And the crew actually found a video that I'd like to play for you now, because it goes right back to what we were talking about earlier in this hour. This is Larry Silverstein, who owned both the World Trade Center, the two Twin Towers, as well as World Trade Center 7, which in comparison to the World Trade Centers, it doesn't look like much. But I mean, that was a huge building, and you can see from the from the long shots of this whole skyline. I mean, that is a massive steel building, which the likes of which have never fallen as a result of fire in the history of mankind before then or since then. But the owner of this, Larry Silverstein, was in a documentary where apparently he just comes out and says that he says to pull it. And I'd love to get your reaction to this. So here's Larry Silverstein basically admitting to having made the decision to bring down this building. Here it is.
World Trade Center 7 had always been considered the starting point for rebuilding. Located north of the slurry wall, 7 had been cleared faster than the rest of the site, and there had been no bodies to recover. Pelted by debris when the North Tower collapsed, 7 burned until late afternoon, allowing occupants to evacuate to safety.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. I said, you know, we've had such a terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull. And then we watched the building collapse.
I mean, there's the owner of World Trade Center 7 seemingly admitting to it being some form of controlled demolition. I mean, if you're talking about bringing a case against, you know, the people that perpetrated this, that seems like an admission that would be eligible for production in court, wouldn't it?
Well, people have tried to confront. I don't know if they've confronted Larry Silverstein directly about this, but have gotten pretty close. The explanation that Larry Silverstein has put out is that he meant pulling the firefighters from the building. And so now we get into a vocabulary game here. You know, when you say pull it regarding a building, do you mean pull firefighters? Because why wouldn't you say pull them?
Right.
And so it's something that I don't use very often, because ultimately I can't prove what's going on in Larry Silverstein's mind. It's certainly suspicious, and I file it away. But what Larry Silverstein can't account for, of course, is the physics. you know, the fact that this building did fall for free fall as it came down for 8 stories. He can't account for the World Trade Center evidence that we've been talking about today. He can't account for the molten iron found at the World Trade Center. Some of it burned for weeks on the pile. You know, it's kind of a cliche meme now to say that jet fuel can't melt steel, but it doesn't make it any less true.
Right.
The jet fuel fires cannot account for the melting of steel at the World Trade Center on that day. And yet we have it. And the other side will say, well, it didn't need to melt in order for the buildings to come down. But the fact is that it did melt.
Right.
What is accounting for this? Where is it coming from? It can only be coming from a thermitic reaction still going on there on the day. So these are all things that Larry Silverstein should be accounting for, as well as, of course, our U.S. government, NIST, the people that we trust to give us these reports and tell us what happened that day. I think they violated that trust, and the American people need to get behind it. You know, getting this call going out for a new investigation. And I really believe that we will one day, whether it happens this year or 5 years from now, we have to keep it up because, again, exposing what happened to these buildings pulls the rug out from a lot of things that are bothering us right now about our modern society. And I think America can survive it. I mean, there's been terrible things that have happened in America in the past, but we acknowledge it and we celebrate the people that either exposed it or fought it, and we move on. I think we're strong people, and I think we can handle the truth and rise above the silence.
Yeah, and like I said, I think architecture and architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth is sort of a great blueprint for any sort of truth movement going forward about any topic. You have a group of professionals that can explain the science behind it. They don't get distracted by going down rabbit holes or pursuing their own political ends. It's about trying to find the truth underneath all of the lies, and it's been such a success, and it's the reason you guys have been able to maintain your operation for the last 20 years. I mean, this 9/11 did a huge part of waking me up. I know a lot of the people listening right now were originally sort of woken up to the reality of the world by what they saw during 9/11, and you guys are so effective at pursuing this really doggedly, and it's really admirable. You also mentioned you had a graphic novel coming up. What is this about?
Yeah, the graphic novel, I am sort of an artist in my spare time, just for fun. I decided to pick it up and do a project for AE over the last couple of years at night. It's called Born on 9/11, and it's a story for the 9/11 Truth Movement, of course, from our perspective. You know, when you see Hollywood movies talking about 9/11, all you get is the official story. Well, in this one, this is a story written by a 9/11 truth person, myself, for 9/11 truth people. And it's about an 18-year-old who lost his father on September 11th. His father's a firefighter, just as this kid is being born. So the story takes place in 2019. And he wakes up to the evidence put out by AE 9/11 Truth. And by kind of slowly starting to speak up, an entire chain of events unfolds. And I don't want to give away the full story, but it's gotten endorsements from, I believe, Rosie O'Donnell and Michelle Little, who lost her brother on that day. So everyone, I encourage you to check it out. We had a pre-sale, and it's going to be going on sale tomorrow again. So you'll be able to get a copy of it. We're still waiting for it to come back from the printers, but as soon as they're in, we'll be shipping them out. And I would just check it out. It's worth a read. And some people have told me it's pretty entertaining, too. So I'm very proud of it.
Yeah, we need more media being produced like that. That's actually entertaining, but also not from the perspective that Hollywood and the rest of mainstream media tends to take. That, again, is another just very powerful tool that I think our side doesn't quite make enough use of. And it's funny when I say our side, because back in the day, this was sort of a liberal position to take. I mean, you wouldn't have people calling Alex Jones a right wing, talking head for promoting 9/11 truth. That was seen as a fringe sort of left wing thing, while the right wing was chanting, hurrah, hurrah, let's go to war for America. So, again, it's just about having the bravery and the dogged persistence to pursue the truth, no matter what they call you, no matter how they try to frame you, no matter which side it is that happens to be the one in power at this point. All of that is superfluous to what really matters, which is the basic truth at the heart of it. Final words here as we close out the show, sir. Of course, my guest is Andrew Steele. You can find the website for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth at ae911truth.org or 911freefall.com. Final words, sir.
Sure. I mean, there was a piece of World War II propaganda I heard, and I took it to heart and applied it to the 9/11 Truth movement and my own work, is that small things done well every day go a long way towards winning this war for us. And that is exactly what's going to expose this issue. It's a peaceful war that we're fighting. It's an informational war, you know, speaking of InfoWars here. Yeah. But that's exactly what it is. It's a war of information. And so it's a small things done. You don't have to do big spectacles, you know, fireworks displays every single day, but it's just doing the work and deciding that you're going to make a difference out there. And you have no idea when you plant seeds how your efforts are going to manifest. You might not even see them. I mean, somebody woke me up. I think I've done some things for AE 9/11 Truth. And but you know, that person who woke me up has no idea that they did. They just posted a video.
You guys helped wake me up, and now I'm a host on InfoWars. So who knows where these things can go? Exactly. Thank you, sir.
Bioremediate. Even more than Trump, Mike Lindell has been out there exposing the fact that the 2020 election was stolen. And his symposium was amazing. 90%+ of the information was accurate and was damning and was groundbreaking. A few poison pills, a few pieces of disinfo were slipped in to try to discredit the whole thing. Folks, I'm surprised the conference even happened. They had infiltrators and others that really disrupted it and tried to shut it down, because Mike Lindell is over the target. And you're over the target when you support his important investigation that is every American's right to do, to contest an election if you think that there was issues. Look what the Democrats have done over the years. And he's continuing his investigations and continuing his work. So it's more important than ever to support what he's doing at MyPillow.com and to support InfoWars at the same time with promo code Alex. Up to 66% off on hundreds of amazing Made in America products at MyPillow.com, promo code Alex. So check it out today. Just a week ago, we got a new shipment of Vitamin Mineral Fusion back in stock, and it was only half of the order we wanted to get. But because we won't cut corners on the quality of what goes into it, the factory can only get limited supplies. So again, it was half the order we wanted. But despite that, I'm still offering it for 33% off, so everybody on the fence will get it. It's critical for your immune system and your whole body. All the essential vitamins, all the essential minerals, and a bunch of key amino acids at InfoWarsStore.com. So while supplies last, until it runs out, we're selling it for 33% off, and it'll be months till more comes in. So get yours today at InfoWarsStore.com, because it's not just a great product. We need those funds to keep operating as well. We're all in a catch-22. But we have another great product, hair and beard formula, that's really a great multivitamin mineral system. That's one of the best multivitamin mineral systems out there. It's just called hair and beard. So get that as well for your immune system. It's great for women, great for children, but it's designed for men. InfoWarsStore.com.